This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of September 2020. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. The Texas governor says most businesses can open to 75% capacity on Monday.
Just yesterday, we had the lowest number of hospitalizations in the past 3 months.
A UT Austin professor struggles to help both her students and her children during the pandemic.
It's hard to maintain the emotional bandwidth to constantly answer to the needs of your own kids while also remaining sympathetic to a student.
And an indigenous tribe trying to reclaim remains from the University of Texas.
Something was dug up here. We've been here 14,000 years. They're our ancestors.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
Since late July, the spread of COVID-19 has steadily and significantly declined.
Here's Governor Greg Abbott with a big announcement this week.
The number of new cases and new hospitalizations have been cut by more than two-thirds. Just yesterday, we had the lowest number of hospitalizations in the past 3 months. And importantly, the number of people recovering from COVID continues to skyrocket. Doctors have explained that the biggest reason for these improvements is because Texans are taking COVID seriously. People are following the
CDC. Okay, let's fast forward to the part where he talks about increasing capacity in businesses.
And that
is what we are announcing today.
For the 19 hospital regions where COVID hospitalizations are less than 15% of all hospitalizations,
the three regions that are not are all in South Texas.
The following business categories that currently have a 50% capacity can increase to a 75% capacity. That includes all retail stores, all restaurants, all office buildings, all manufacturing, all museums and libraries, and all gyms. Those openings can begin as early as Monday, September the 21st. Also, effective immediately, hospitals in those regions can return to ordinary elective surgical procedures. And additionally, all nursing home facilities, assisted living centers, state-supported living centers, and other long-term care facilities are allowed to reopen for visitation.
But bars must remain closed.
Because bars are nationally recognized as COVID-spreading locations, they are still not able to open at this time. However, it is important for them to know that we are focused on finding ways to get them open. We need to see COVID numbers continue to be contained. And we need to work with the bars on effective strategies that will ensure that when they do open, the possibility of spread of COVID is contained.
Austin's Mayor Steve Adler reacted with a statement that reads in part, quote, "Austin's positivity rate and cases are increasing among students over age 10. Infections among our susceptible populations are still too high. I'm concerned and wish the governor had waited until these numbers were lower," end quote. And we heard something similar from the interim health authority for Austin, Dr. Mark Escott.
So, you know, we're not entirely upset with the governor. I think the governor is trying to balance the risk to our health and safety and the risk to the economy. I think we're probably a couple of weeks away from a position where we would have supported this. Again, families have to decide. And I want to remind folks that if they are high risk, they have underlying health conditions, or they have someone living in their household that has underlying health conditions, they should not be taking risks.
Well, now that restaurants will be able to seat up to 75% of their capacity, up from 50%, does not mean that all will. Chef Jorge Alcocer owns Fuego Latino in Georgetown, and he says he will keep his dining room as is.
It's more in how the rest of your customers are going to feel, how you're going to feel by putting your family at a greater risk. And if I put 75% here, I mean, yes, it might bring me a 25% more of business, you know, but at the end of the day, do I want to risk, you know, like, I mean, and having one of my employees getting sick or worse, you know, like, I mean, my customers or one of my family members? No. And I told my employees from the beginning, I said, it is not worth for me, you know, like to actually take that approach.
Austin City Council members took their first steps to providing more money to ailing music venues during the pandemic. Council members unanimously passed the plan last night, and it directs city staff to find ways to divert extra city money to at-risk clubs and bars and venues, as well as seek out-of-state and federal relief money. Rebecca Reynolds is with the Music Venue Alliance of Austin, and she says even before the pandemic, venues were already struggling to pay rent. And she says previous city efforts have not focused squarely on preserving live music.
We have been here before. We've seen unanimous votes from council on resolution language directing the formation of a venue fund. The independent venue industry needs lawmakers who are motivated to understand and describe the cultural and economic value of these small businesses without diluting it.
The city plan would also find money to support bars and restaurants and childcare operators before the end of the month, which is only about 11 days away. A council member said they were open to setting aside a separate pot of money strictly for venues. Some city departments are saying that it will be hard to come up with that money without affecting other services or priorities. KUT Samuel King says that includes the Austin Transportation Department.
In a memo to the mayor and city council, Transportation Director Robert Spiller says transferring some fees to a business preservation fund would require changes to ATD's budget. Spiller suggests some proposed projects like signal upgrades could be delayed until after voters decide whether to approve a bond issue during the general election.
Meanwhile, the Development Services Department says its fees are not intended to produce excess revenue as they're set at the cost of providing services to customers. The Texas Supreme Court has issued an order requiring courts to educate renters about a national eviction ban. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has that.
The order requires that when a tenant is served with an eviction, which typically happens at their door, that this letter include information about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's ban on evictions. It should also include what's called a declaration. This is the piece of paper tenants need to sign and give to their landlord to make sure they qualify for the protection. The paper, which is legally binding, says tenants have lost income or work hours during the pandemic and are trying their best to make partial rent payments. In filing an eviction, landlords need to say whether tenants have given them this declaration. Also this week, the Austin City Council extended an ordinance requiring landlords to give 60 days notice before filing an eviction when a tenant has not paid rent. It's unclear how often this may be used, though. While evictions can still be filed in court, national and local eviction bans may stop judges from doing anything with them. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
The University of Texas has created a new COVID-19 dashboard to provide statewide projections of just how quickly the disease is spreading. As KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, the new tool is similar to what UT is using to help Austin and Travis County officials make policy decisions.
This is similar modeling to the dashboard that helps steer pandemic policy locally. The hope is that it will help other areas of the state determine a course of action if conditions worsen where they are. Generally speaking, hospitalizations are trending lower across the state, but if gathering and mask restrictions are loosened statewide, UT epidemiologist Lauren Ansel Myers says it will be important for officials to understand what they could be up against.
The spread of this virus, the threat to our communities, the threat to our healthcare systems really depends on the decisions that we make, the policies we enact. And you can see this as you look back through time and you think about the ups and downs of the transmission rate and the hospitalization.
UT's COVID-19 modeling consortium estimates that around 15% of Texans have been infected with the disease. Jimmy Moss, KUT News.
Some counties in Texas will have to reprint ballots for the upcoming election because of two recent Texas Supreme Court rulings. The court rulings force local election officials to put third-party candidates on the ballot, even if those candidates did not pay the proper fee. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports Travis County officials say they have been scrambling after this ruling.
Travis County Clerk Dana Debevoise's office says they got lucky. In a statement, Debevoise says her office received unofficial information on Sunday morning that a late ballot change was a possibility. So she stopped the presses. Debevoise says 10,000 ballots had already been printed out of a total order for 180,000 mail-in ballots. She says her office worked Tuesday night to reconstruct the ballot and ran two shifts of election workers to meet the Saturday federal deadline for mailing ballots to military and overseas voters. The court ruled Tuesday that each county has to bear the expense of the reprints and corrections that include Green Party and Libertarian candidates that didn't pay the candidate filing fee or submit a petition of signatures instead of the fee. Debevoise says in her statement that the ruling was unfair to other candidates. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
We got a report this week on home sales in the Austin area, and the median sales price for a single-family home within the Austin city limits hit an all-time high last month, according to this data from the Austin Board of Realtors. $435,000 was the median sales price last month, so that means half the homes sold were more than $435,000 and half were less than. That was a 15% increase over the median home price a year earlier, pre-pandemic. But the number of homes sold barely budged because so few were listed for sale. Across the metro area, though, if you look in the entire five-county region, not just in the city limits, it's a different story. The number of homes sold last month was up by 13% compared to August 2019. People were taking advantage of rock-bottom interest rates. So the median sales price in the five-county metro area up 11% over a year earlier to $335,000. The University of Texas at Austin started its fall semester more than 3 weeks ago, and UT's COVID dashboard shows the number of positive coronavirus tests each week has been in the double digits. Last week, 79. The week before that, 48. We don't have this week's total yet. So far, a lot of the focus has been on keeping students socially distanced and healthy. There's another disruptive part of heading back to campus, though: childcare for faculty and staff. KUT's Claire McInerney reports on a college professor and mom of two toddlers.
There's a lot of caregiving in Ayelet Heimsen-Lushkov's life. She's the mother to two kids, a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old. She's also a college professor and teaches both undergraduate and graduate classes.
So it does feel like there's a lot of people who need things from you as a parent and as a professor, and COVID really intensified that.
Ayelet and her husband are both professors of classics at the University of Texas at Austin. Before the pandemic, her kids attended the UT Child Development Center while she and her husband taught. When UT closed campus in March, the center was closed as well. So she and her husband had to transition to teaching online with two little kids around.
It's hard to maintain the emotional bandwidth to kind of, you know, constantly answer to the needs of your own kids while also remaining sympathetic to a student who might not have, you know, the right internet connection, or who has a relative who has COVID, or who is just stressed and worried and confused about Canvas or whatnot.
When the child care center was closed for months, families were not charged. So while Ayelet and her husband were struggling to give lectures via Zoom and finish the spring semester with two small kids crawling on them, they at least weren't losing money. But the center reopened at the end of August, and Ayelet didn't feel comfortable sending them back. To keep their spots, she and her husband are now paying the tuition. They also hired a babysitter to come watch the kids for a few hours in the afternoon so they can work.
So we will effectively be paying double for childcare. And it's a tremendous privilege that we're able to do that. I know a lot of families around us can't afford to do that.
She said that they'll be dipping into their savings to do this, so it'll only be sustainable through December. She hopes by then, cases in Austin will drop lower, so she feels comfortable sending the kids back to her childcare center.
It feels like there are no good choices right now, and it feels like a lot of the choices that parents are having to make have cascades of consequences that are not what we want. A lot of these choices feel like things that could be made better with more systemic investment in early childhood education.
I talked to Ayelet again after UT semester had started. She says, on one hand, she's happy they didn't send the kids back to daycare. There's already been a child there who tested positive for COVID-19. But she and her husband are struggling to meet the demands of work while the kids are constantly vying for their attention.
It's just constantly feeling like you're not doing something. You're always failing at something. I'm either not like prepping for my courses enough, or I'm not paying enough attention to my children.
She teaches a freshman class that introduces students to college-level writing, research, and discussion. Ayelet says she feels pressure to make these students have a good experience doing the class online, since this is their first introduction to college.
You know, I can't give them the standard experience. I'm trying to overcompensate in other ways, like making things look nice and focus on community building and really thinking up ways of getting students engaged so that they don't like just get lost behind their cameras. But, you know, that doubles the prep time.
And time is limited right now. She has around 20 hours of childcare a week, which between her live lectures, faculty and committee meetings, and prepping for classes goes by quick. They've already had instances when their three-year-old daughter left the babysitter and interrupted their lectures.
Wait, you mean you and me?
No, I mean me and Baba.
As well as interviews with a reporter. Ayelet says she notices her daughter seems more sad and is getting sick of staying at home so much. And that wears on her as she tries to stay on top of her work.
I'm pretty sure in a week I will be a wreck. I'm already feeling it. We just have a lot more like faculty meetings and like random demands on our times that pop up, things that need to be, and I already feel like I'm running to stand still work-wise. I suspect it will just get worse from here on out.
She said the only way she can really make plans right now is to plan for the worst to happen, because so far, she's been right. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
Age, class, and politics can be big barriers to people seeing eye to eye. But Susan Bernessen got over those obstacles to form a friendship that began with genealogy. She wrote about it for our Common Ground project.
Looking back, I'm as amazed as anyone. The project was simple enough. Several mornings a week, I helped a longtime Austinite research her ancestors. What's amazing is that we worked together 21 years. Not long before we started, I told my husband, I want to do genealogy for a unique Austin family, and I want to design books. I didn't know how. I did have journalism and design experience and had researched my family. Then I met Colleen. Her stately home was filled with Scottish artwork, men in kilts, children playing, and soldiers at war. Colleen, in her late 70s, was direct. I want to find my grand ancestors who emigrated from Scotland. Can you help me? I accepted the challenge. We had our differences. Age, social status, politics. Our ancestors fought on opposite sides in the Civil War. She had a PC but didn't use it. I loved Macs and was excited that genealogy was becoming easier online. Over time, we found plenty of common ground. It helped that we both loved family stories, music, and mystery. And we loved to laugh. She greeted me warmly at her front door with, "Come in the house." As I left, she'd say a little wistfully, "Are you gone?" Like something you'd say to dear friends or family. Well into her late 90s, Colleen remained true to the Grant clan motto, stand fast. We never stopped searching for her Scottish ancestors. Along the way, we found many others. Together, we created four books about her family. She and I researched and wrote. I edited and designed the books. We made sure copies ended up with family members, friends, and libraries we knew would treasure them. Last December, Colleen and I visited one last time. For several months, she hadn't been able to go out for lunch, something she and her husband loved to do. I often joined them. That December day, we shared a lively conversation about music, books, Christmas, and bluebonnets. As she left, she said, "Let's go out to lunch soon." I answered, as always, "Yes, let's do it." A week later, Colleen died. Before her funeral, I listened to The Parting Glass, a Scottish song for friends who were taking their leave. I thought how gracefully Colleen moved through life. She found common ground with me and so many others. She felt close by, especially when I heard these words. "So fill to me the parting glass, and drink a health, whate'er befall, and gently rise and softly call, good night, and joy be to you all."
Susan Bernessen reading her story for our Common Ground Project. We teamed up with the Austin Public Library and the Library Foundation to collect true stories about overcoming differences. You can hear more stories in this series at KUT.org. For the past 4 years, members of the Mayakon Garza Band in San Marcos have been asking the University of Texas to repatriate three sets of Native American remains held by the school's archaeological research laboratory. The tribe wants to rebury them. KUT's Rianne Roldan reports on the group's efforts to get the remains, including a recent protest.
More than 50 people circled around an altar right beneath a giant concrete sign welcoming people to UT Austin's J.J. Pickle Research Campus. Laid across two blankets are bouquets of flowers and bowls with traditional sacred medicines like Texas sage and cedar. At the altar's head are three cardboard boxes. They represent the three Native American remains that the Mayakon Garza Band are asking for. Maria Rocha is on the band's board of elders. She's also the executive director of the Indigenous Cultures Institute in San Marcos, which was founded almost 15 years ago by members of the Mayakon Garza Band.
Who has been in Texas where these culturally unidentifiable remains have been dug up? Who has been here for 14,000 years? The Kualtecan people.
Kualtecan is a collective name for the small autonomous bands of Native Americans who lived in Central and South Texas before the Spanish conquest.
So just logically, something was dug up here. We've been here 14,000 years. They're our ancestors.
The band says it's important to rebury the remains because the Mayakon Garza believe that when someone dies, only their physical body dies. What begins after is a spiritual journey.
And when the remains are disturbed, it disturbs the spiritual journey of the spirit. And the spirit is out there in limbo, in agony, in pain, suffering and all this stuff. So that's why we feel it's our obligation to repatriate, to rebury, the physical remains of that individual.
That's Dr. Mario Garza. He's an elder of the band and married to Maria. Together, they run the institute. Maria and Mario say they've been helping tribes all over Texas repatriate remains for decades.
It's our obligation to fight that fight. And even if we don't win, what will UT benefit from beating indigenous people out of their ancestors' remains?
Yeah, what do they have to gain?
UT has returned indigenous remains before. In 2007, the school reached an agreement with the Comanche Nation. But UT says it cannot legally prove that these remains are related to the Mayakon Garza Band. In a letter sent to Garza earlier this month, the university says, quote, "The remains are culturally unidentifiable and nothing ties them to the Mayakon Garza Band other than your assertion that any remains in Central Texas are your ancestors." The band's elders understand this is an uphill battle. But back at the demonstration, many of those present felt like the fight was only just beginning, despite UT's denial. Jessica Sanchez-Flores is co-chair of the Native American Graduate Student Association at UT. She called on those in attendance to send letters and make calls to Interim President Jay Hartzell.
This is not a separation between indigenous or non-indigenous, but rather that we all come together because we are talking about ancestors, and this could be anyone's ancestors.
For Cheyenne Grubbs, it's a question of seeing Native American people as human and not just remains. She's on the board of UT's undergraduate Native American Student Association.
Hello, my name is Cheyenne. I belong to the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma through my grandmother. There's people hurting. There's people feeling a lot of emotions. There's answers to ease that pain, and it's just doing what's right.
The band hopes that with enough attention from UT students and the larger Central Texas community, that the school might change its mind. Brianne Roldan, KUT News.
That's KUT Weekend for the third weekend of September 2020. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. Thank you.